Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. And we are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. I'm a couple of days late, but joining me, as ever, bright and wide awake at 5 o'clock in the morning, is Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm good. We had a good weekend at Wembley. Possibly the best Wembley game we've had. Certainly right up there. 27-27 tie. Jeff, it wasn't perfect, but there was plenty to entertain the fans. It was two teams that have got a few flaws, but two teams that are really exciting as well. We just couldn't find a winner.
Well, I'll tell you what. You watched it, but what I watched over here, the fans were into the game. It was a great, you know, great environment. And like you say, those are two teams that while they may not be flawless, they certainly are exciting.
Yeah, it was a really good weekend again. It kind of put a cap on three outstanding events. Really, it's been a great international series for the UK here, and we've already had our hand tipped in terms of 2017 for one game. We don't know whether it's going to be three or four. Next year, I know that there are. Mark Waller was talking on Sky Sports News about how there are a lot of planned railway construction works next year, which could affect some dates. So we're still in limbo about whether it's three or four games. But we do know that it's going to be the Miami Dolphins as a home team against the New Orleans Saints. So it's never a bad thing when you get to watch Drew Brees do his thing.
No, you're going to see the one of the greatest that ever threw a ball in the National Football League. And then, you know, when I heard the Dolphins were coming, I was excited because there's such a strong Dolphin fan base in the UK, and I think the Dolphins are going to find that it's almost a home game. Plus, Jay Ajayi gets to come home and play in front of, you know, his people.
That's going to be great. Listen, because it's later in the week, so myself and Nick Pike, the whole time zone thing, I think this gets us every year. Every year we end up doing the same thing, and we have you sitting on the phone waiting for us to call, and we don't keep Lombardi time. So I thought perhaps, Jeff, because it's later in the week, we'd kind of gear it more towards a preview of the week nine games coming up. But a couple of big issues that I'd like to talk about with you. First, the Patriots, they always throw us a curveball. There's always something that this team does, and we always are led to say, well, we trust in Bill Belichick, but this one was a head-scratcher, or certainly came out of left field just before the trade deadline. They traded Jamie Collins to the Cleveland Browns. He's a second-team All-Pro last year, a Pro Bowl linebacker. And really, I don't know if anyone would have seen this one coming, Jeff, apart from maybe the people in the New England building, because Jamie Collins is a free agent next year. He's already talked about wanting more than $10 million per year. The Patriots have got other free agents coming up next season, and Belichick, well, there were reports that he kind of freelances a little bit. I mean, this was just a surprising move. What did you make of it?
Well, obviously, anytime you give up a player like Jamie Collins, it does cause you to say why. But as you learn more about it, Neil, and you look at it primarily from a business standpoint, if they're that far apart in the money now, you have to understand that the Patriots have to look at this, and they're always, and this is one of the things I enjoy about them, is they always have a plan for the future. They always kind of one step ahead. You can go back through the history. He's released and traded great players that seem to be at the prime of their career in the past, and it's kind of always worked out for them. And you know, if there's that far apart on the money, because I'm hearing like $10 million apart, it, obviously that doesn't bode well as he walks into free agency. And if you can't get him back, if you can't sign him back, and I'm sure, you know, those conversations were in great depth, and if they felt like they couldn't get him back, then you at least get an opportunity to get something for him. And a third-round compensatory pick doesn't sound like much for Jamie Collins. But if Jamie Collins walks in free agency, then you're there with nothing. So yes. I can understand it from that standpoint.
And Patriots fans will be kind of screaming at their devices now and saying, well, this isn't surprising to us because He's moved on Richard Seymour, Randy Moss, Chandler Jones, Logan Mankins, Wes Welker before he was beginning his decline. He told Vince Wilfork he wouldn't be re-signed. Lawyer Malloy, Mike Vrabel, all good servants to this club. Belichick has this cold side of him, the business side of him, absolutely, where when it's time to move on, he will move on.
Well, and you know, in almost every single one of those cases, it's been a guy who was just starting the decline or was in the decline of his career.
Yeah.
Collins is a little bit more surprising because he's at right in the prime of his career. So from that standpoint, it is surprising. But again, from you got to understand, it's a multifaceted business. Not only, I mean, you can't keep every chess piece. You got to keep the ones that you feel are most important to you, the ones that are the most easily replaced. And it sounds hard to talk about easily replacing a Pro Bowl linebacker because it's never easy to replace one. But you know, there were trades. You know, they traded with Detroit to get a Van Noy, the linebacker, earlier, about 10 days earlier. So I'm sure this thing has been at work, I would say probably for the last couple months. They've been alerted that this may be an eventuality, and they shopped around and found, that Cleveland was willing to give up a draft choice for him. And now the interesting thing is for Cleveland, the ball's in their court now because they need to try and sign him because his comment was that he's now auditioning for 31 other teams during the end of the season. So, again, the Browns now, the ball's in their court. Can you get him signed, or do you lose him for nothing?
Well,
so
see, this
it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
That will be an interesting second half of the season, Jeff, because that's an interesting thing from Jamie Collins, because Jamie Collins went to bed 7-1 and he woke up 0-8 and he had nothing to do with it and he had no say in where he ended up, and he might not have a say in where he goes after this season, because once he's on, once he's now on Cleveland's books, they've got that opportunity to franchise tag him. It might not be that easy for him to get out. But let's talk inside the game a little bit, Jeff, about the. About the fact that these players, I mean, he's got a, I remember talking to Brandon Albert about being traded to going to Miami, and he was saying, there's so much that goes into it. You've got to move home, you've got to, change your cars, you've got to go and buy a new, all just little things that we do in everyday life, suddenly thrown on a player. And Brandon Albert, when he moved to Miami, he had no children, so it was not an issue, I'm sure. I don't know Jamie Collins' situation, but when you've got it, if you're a player who's been traded, you've got to go home. You've got to tell your family. Your wife might have a job in the city you're living in. There's a kind of personal element to all of this, which the player doesn't really have any control over.
No, you don't, and that's one of the things that the players, it's kind of unique, I guess, in football, because in most other professional sports, you can have no trade clauses built into your contract. You can have, the ability to opt out of a trade if you don't want to go to a specific place. But in pro football, it doesn't work that way. And as you said, Neil, just the trade is just the tip of the iceberg. When you look at all of the things that go on, these guys get embedded in the communities. They get active in the communities. Some of them may have, side businesses in town, all of those things. And it's just a tremendous amount of upheaval. And then when you factor in, you look at being a team that has an opportunity to go to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, and all that comes with that, the money, the Super Bowl bonus, the limelight, all of that stuff, the ring, and now you go to a team that's 0-8 and really, really, there's a long way to go before they're going to be a winning football team. That's a disheartening thing for a young player.
Jeff, I want to talk a little bit about the Jacksonville Jaguars. And obviously, it's a difficult one because I'm a big fan of Gus Bradley, and I have been since the very first time I met him at the Super Bowl, a couple of days after he'd been unveiled as the head coach of the Jags. Been very impressed with him. Always been very generous with his time to me. We've always spent a lot of time chatting when the cameras are switched off, and Jacksonville always make me very welcome whenever I go there every year. But they're 2-5. Every week we talk about them not being prepared and not being ready to come out of the gates fast. They start flat. Last Thursday was embarrassing against the Tennessee Titans. I mean, the game looked like it was close in the end, but it really wasn't. You've got a flat team, a team that doesn't look like they care at times. They lack discipline. They had two guys ejected the week before, Malik Jackson and Jalen Ramsey. You've got a quarterback in Blake Bortles who's now bringing in his own quarterback coach to try and fix the kind of giddy-up that's back in his throwing arm. And Greg Olsen is the fall guy because he's the offensive coordinator and he gets fired. I don't know. I like Gus a lot, Jeff, but this doesn't sit very well with me. I don't know if all of those problems fall on the offensive coordinator.
Right, Neil, this is kind of a trend that's going on right now. I mean, obviously, when Norv Turner resigned the other night after the Monday night game, it's really real. I can't even describe it to the listeners just how high pressure coaching in professional football is, and you're under scrutiny, incredibly under scrutiny. I felt like something was going to happen in Jacksonville. You know, when Mr. Khan sat in on the team meetings and started to become public about, you know, how they needed to change, and you know, obviously there was going to be some sort of movement. You know, again, you never really know the insides and of what went on in the meeting room, but obviously it certainly smells like they offered up Greg Olsen as a scapegoat in this situation, and usually those are the signs of the end. And it's just the prolonging the agony, basically, because when you start to jettison coaches and you got players that, you know, you got the undisciplined issue that they've had, you got players bringing in coaches that aren't under, you know, aren't contracted by the club to, you know, work with them individually. All of those things, to me, are signs that it's slipping away from you. And I feel bad for Gus because I like Gus personally. I'm like you. I'm a kind of a Gus fan.
Yep.
But it does not look good there. You know, I heard this interestingly enough about Bortles is if you take his numbers when the game is out of, you know, basically out of reach, he's a Pro Bowl quarterback. But you take his numbers in the first quarter and, you know, you'd wonder if he's an NFL starter. That's something that I think they need to address.
Jeff, I was crunching some numbers looking ahead to week 9 in the NFL. And Jacksonville this week play Kansas City. So Jacksonville 2-5. The Chiefs are 5-2. So get this, Jeff. In 2012, the Jags and the Chiefs both finished 2-14 in the NFL. They had the worst records in the league. They both began a rebuild. Jacksonville hired Dave Caldwell. The Chiefs hired John Dorsey. Caldwell hired Gus Bradley. Dorsey hired Andy Reid. Since then, the Jags have gone 14-41. That's 31st best in the NFL. The Chiefs have gone 36-19. That's 7th best. I mean, we talk about Gus Bradley, but we've got to talk about the overall rebuild. And there's two glaring opposites that face each other on the field this weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, the Chiefs, I think in some ways they're a little bit different clubs when they both made the switch. You know, the Chiefs had come through some unbelievably difficult times, emotional times. I don't know if you remember, they had the player that committed suicide in outside the stadium. I mean, it was a lot of really nasty things. But they had some players. Now, when you looked at Jacksonville when they went in there, they were really talent devoid, and it's taken them a long time to assemble a talented football team, or on paper, what is a talented football team? The difference in when you talked about making the hires and when you bring in Andy Reid, you bring in a guy who's been there, done that, has built a team, built an organization, been to a Super Bowl. When you bring in Gus Bradley, you're bringing in an assistant who has a lot of, you know, credentials when you talk about as a coordinator, but has never been a head coach. And that's the difficult. Till you sit in the corner office, I'm going to tell you something. Till you sit in that corner office, you have no idea how complex and how everything, you know, Harry Truman used to say the buck stops here. Well, when you're the head coach in the National Football League, everything comes through you and all the problems are yours. And, you know, it's so it is a big, big job.
Especially as a young coach, right, Jeff? Because, I mean, you were a young head coach in the CFL. Do you think it was it different because of your age at that time?
Yeah, I mean, because you're there's a certain naivete about being young. When I had that opportunity when I was still in my 30s, you know, you think you can outwork every problem, and you think that, you know, because that's kind of been the way it's been for you as you come up, you've been successful. successful, you know, you think that, you know, by sheer will alone, you can make it happen. And, you know, that's kind of Gus. You know, he's got that positive attitude and he believes that he can get everything done. And, but the reality of it is you got to have the players, number one, and you got to have buy-in, total buy-in in the organization to what you're trying to get done. And then you have to have the, you have to have the time to implement your program. Now, I would give Mr. Khan plenty of credit in that regard. They have been patient in Jacksonville. Mm. And now this team looks like, on paper, like it's talented enough, but it just has not. It's like Kelvin Beachum said, we have to show that we can win. And right now, they haven't been able to do that.
No, so the Jags face the Chiefs this weekend. Let's stay on the Chiefs theme, because at the International Series game this past weekend, I got to sit and spend a decent chunk of time with Carl Peterson, who was the general manager and president of the Kansas City Chiefs for 20 years. During that time, the Chiefs had 149 consecutive sellouts at home. They made the playoffs 9 times. So we're going to sprinkle in some of my chat with Carl Peterson over the next few weeks on the Inside the Huddle podcast. And we started this week talking about that all-important relationship between a general manager and his head coach.
Well, I think if the general manager and the head coach are not on the same page and have the same vision for building the team, that it's a recipe for disaster. Mm. And we've seen it happen too many times in the NFL. Now, things have changed over the years. When I was a general manager, it was the primary responsibility of my position to hire the head football coach. Mm. And so I was very much involved in looking for, interviewing, and selecting what I thought would be the appropriate head coach. Certainly introducing him to the owner. Mm. But I was fortunate to work for, I think I call him the finest owner in all of professional sports, not just the National Football League, in mm. Lamar Hunt.
Yeah.
And he had a philosophy very similar to mine, administratively. He'd hire the person, and he said, look, I hired you because I think you're the one to do it, and now I'm going to let you do what you mm. do best. And he said, I'll be here to help whenever you want, but I'm not going to be looking over your shoulder every day and telling you what to do. And I think we all know the consequences. If you don't do well, mm. you know, the results are always the same thing. You're going to be going out the door. Mm. But without that GM head coach relationship, it can really create major, major problems. The head coach has to know exactly, and the general manager, what their responsibilities and their areas of authority are. Mm. And once that's defined, then they're locked arms to go forward, because I always felt my job as a GM was to give my head coach, after I selected him, mm. everything possible for him to win, including his staff, obviously player personnel, players, but a football support staff, mm. Trainers, doctors, equipment guys, everybody that makes it go, video, etc., and facilities, and, in my opinion, very important, an environment mm. that he felt could win. One of the reasons that we worked hard to fill Arrowhead Stadium when I took over in 1989, and to try to make it an environment where guys wanted to play,
yeah.
and you had a tremendous home field advantage.
You did that 149 consecutive sellouts, yeah. wasn't it? Incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it only needs a little chink in the armor, though, doesn't it? Because even if it's only a small perception, let's say it's, you know, Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano, the perception from a media point of view is that those two are not on the same page, and you only need a tiny little bit of that, because guys like me in the media will try and find a story, and it will become a story.
Try to make perception yeah, reality. Yeah. No, you're right. That's not to say that I had 4 head coaches mm. that I hired at Kansas City, beginning with Marty Schottenheimer and ending with Dick Vermeil and Herman Edwards, but we could disagree, but we always, before we left the room, we would agree to disagree, but then leaving the room, we were going to be on the same page.
Yeah.
And because we're both after the same thing, the success of the franchise, mm-hmm. On the field and off the field. And if your head coach and your GM are of the same mind, you've got a great chance for success. But if they're not, and like you say, sometimes small things can become big things, and you've got to work them out. I always felt it was my job, even though I hired the head coach, every day to get up from my office to go down to his office, which was on the other side of the building, to walk in and sit down and say, Marty, Dick, how can I help? How are we doing? How can I help? Mm. Now, I had an owner that did that with me. He was from Dallas, Texas, but he would call once or twice a week and say, Carl, Lamar Hunt would call me and say, how are we doing and how can I help? And he meant it. Mm. And I'd say, Lamar, I need you to come to Arrowhead and judge some tailgating contests before the game. He said, I'm there. Yeah. And anyway, it was a beautiful relationship.
Think you're the best at fantasy football? Don't wait till the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test and win big every week at DraftKings.co.uk. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. At DraftKings, you can play whenever you want, against who you like, in a variety of contests. Playing is easy. Just choose your contest, create your lineup, and follow your team live. Hurry to DraftKings.co.uk/NFL and play for free. That's DraftKings.co.uk/NFL. Play free for a shot at winning amazing prizes, including a trip to the Super Bowl, a jersey of your choice, DraftKings merchandise, and much more. Only at DraftKings.co.uk/NFL.
Jeff, Carl Peterson was quite the general manager, and it's going to be great for us to get his insight as we go through the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of working in training camp in Kansas City in 2000 for Coach Vermeil. And you talk about a head coach and general manager's relationship. Theirs was very, very long and very, very solid. Going back to the time when Coach was the head coach at UCLA, Dick was the head coach at UCLA, and Carl was one of his young assistants.
Yeah.
And then Carl went to Philadelphia with him as an assistant, went into front office work while he was in Philadelphia, and then when the USFL came about, he went over to the Philadelphia Stars as the general manager, and that's how he got his general manager, you know, cut his general manager teeth. But his relationship with Coach was very, very long and deep, and great trust between them. And so he that was one of the reasons why, you know, after Marty and after that experience had kind of run its course in Kansas City, and, you know, he brought Coach out of retirement to try and turn it one more time in Kansas City, and, you know, got him to the playoffs, but could never get him to the Super Bowl. But it was really fun for me to watch those two together, because there was such a deep, deep, you know, bond, and there was so much understanding and trust and belief in what each other, you know, stood for. And it was a great opportunity for me as a young guy to have an opportunity to be around those guys.
One more thing on the coaching side, Jeff. I think we saw last week, and I was thinking about you, how you sort of have to stand on the sidelines. We saw Wade Phillips go down hard last week for the Denver Broncos, and thankfully Wade is okay. He went off to hospital, but he was fine. But I was watching the footage and trying to commentate over it on Sky Sports, and at the time we couldn't see who it was, and I was okay, there's a coach down, and then somebody said in my ear, oh, it's Wade, and I was like, oh no, he took a really hard hit. He's 69 years old, you know. I hope this is good ending for Wade. I hope he's okay. But I thought about it, Jeff, and it's a dangerous place, the sidelines, especially for coaches, because you think about Wade, he's going to want players around him ready to shuttle on and off the field. He had nowhere to go. Like you say, well, be careful and make sure you keep your eyes on the field. But when you're a coach like that, you're kind of penned in. He was a sitting duck.
Yeah, and you know, when you're 69, you don't move as good as you did when you're 29. And then you get caught in there, and there's a sea of people, and, you know, it's just natural reaction. I really was scared for him when I saw how hard he got hit. And then when you saw him being taken off on the backboard and strapped in. But I don't know if you noticed, Neil, but it was typical Wade. He's waving his one finger as he's going off the field. And I thought to myself, he's going to be okay. Now, if he, all of our people out there that follow Twitter, you got to go to Son of a Bum, because he comes up with some priceless things. Have you ever seen those, like, spacesuits? He looked like a marshmallow man, we call him over here. This is like these body suits that are supposed to protect it. He put out, tweeted out yesterday he needed one of those, and then he said, appreciate all the kind wishes and all of that. He goes, I broke a rib, and he's got a picture. I don't know how he did it, but he had some gif of somebody cutting a rib, like a ribeye steak, cutting the rib off. He always finds a way to poke fun at himself. So it's follow him on Twitter because it's a blast.
Yeah, he said he gave himself the Big Hit of the Week award, didn't he? They give that out in Denver, I think, the Big Hit award. He gave it to himself. Listen, let's just give you updated on what's going on in NFL Shop Europe before we make our picks for Week 9. So New Era have some of the current stars of the NFL teaming up with them to design their very own team caps. These include Andy Dalton of the Bengals, Kenny Stills of the Dolphins, Khalil Mack of the Raiders, and Blake Bortles of the Jags. Their exclusive caps are now available over at the Europe Shop. So that's europe.nflshop.com. So go and check those out. Christmas is coming. There's some good gifts to be had. So let's dig into the games then, Jeff, and we can take a little bit more time with these this week. I think we were both level again last week. I'm frantically trying to go back through my notebook to see, because we had a tie, so we've got to cut that one out. And crikey, I'm going back a long way. Right, I'm going to find them. We'll talk among ourselves for a second. This is good radio, isn't it?
Hey, what in the heck with the Vikings? I was shocked at that one. Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. I was surprised how well the Bears played. I was happy for Cutler how well he played. But boy, the Vikings just looked out of sorts. And then, you know, in the second half, Neil, when they're trying to get back, clawing to get back in the game, you know, they're taking, you know, too much time to get out of the huddle. I mean, there's no sense of urgency about them offensively playing the game. And I'm sure that was part of the conversation that led to Norv deciding that, you know, they were going to part as friends and just agree to disagree on some things.
Jeff, they've given up 11 sacks in the last 2 weeks. So you can say, well, look, Sam Bradford's not playing well. Well, he's under a lot of pressure. The running game is 31st in the NFL. They're averaging 2.7 yards per rush, which is the lowest in the NFL. But all of that kind of masks what might be a bigger problem, which is, what the heck happened to your defense? Jordan Howard put up 200-plus yards on you. I mean, we're all going to look at the offense and go, oh, the Vikings can't move the ball. The strength of your team was the defense, and you got absolutely hammered.
Yeah, and they got to rally up right now because they're 5-2. They still got a chance for the playoffs and all of that. But it can turn fast in pro football. And, you know, the chemistry on your football team. And I think now, you know, this is where a guy like Zim, who wears his heart on his sleeve and is going to be so brutally honest all the time, you know, you sometimes players today, it's a little different than Parcells' times. Players were more likely to, you know, take a public bashing like he did, calling his offensive line soft a couple weeks ago. Players a little more, you know, it's a little tougher to be that way with guys today because, you know, number one, they'll lash back at you. Two, you know, they recognize that it's them that has the security, not you. And that's really an interesting turn in the way the game is done now. You know, it used to be that there was always for most players, there was the threat of losing your job. Well, the reality of it is now, the way these guys are paid, sometimes it's easier to find a new head coach than it is to find a new left tackle or quarterback or, you know, any of the superstar positions.
Jeff, you have filled the time brilliantly. I found our results from last week. Excluding the tie at Wembley Stadium, I went 8-4 and you went 8-4 as well. So not too bad, but we'll crack on and see if we can do better.
Pretty good week. Let's see if we can crank that up and go. Let's go 10-2
this week. So let's start with the Thursday night game, Atlanta at Tampa Bay. So Jeff, again, last week, Julio Jones just 3 catches for 29 yards, clearly hurt his ankle early in the game. But you know, the Falcons win a big one, win a shootout against the Green Bay Packers. And I guess Matt Ryan, you know, he continues to be able to spread that ball around.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with them offensively. Matt Ryan, you know, he's having a tremendous year throwing the football. Julio Jones is finally, I think, starting to get some of the recognition that he's been deserving for years. And, you know, I thought Sanu played extremely well for them last week. So it's not a one-man show in Atlanta. So I'm going to take Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm going to take Atlanta as well. Sanu's interesting, Jeff, because he gets a lot more of the... It seems like he gets a lot more of the red zone work than Julio Jones, whereas you'd think Jones is the bigger target. Sanu's been a really nice pickup for the Falcons.
Yeah, he is. And I think part of the reason for that, Neil, is when you watch the tape, you see an awful lot of coverage rolled to Julio, doubles on Julio when they get down in that red zone, because that's the guy that you would anticipate that they would go to, and you should go to, because he's big and long and strong and can do all that stuff. But Sanu has given him a second option that, you know, is reliable in the red zone. And, you know, they're doing a good job offensively of, you know, spreading the ball around and making everybody feel a part of it. And that makes it tough on defensive coordinators, because you got to defend the whole field and everybody.
Matt Ryan leads the NFL in passing yards with 2,636 and passing touchdowns with 19 halfway through his season. Let's move on to Sunday then. And Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Jeff, this has been traditionally a great rivalry. I guess the shine comes off it a little bit. Rivalries generally are as great as the teams involved in them. And the Ravens have not quite been what they were at that level when these two teams were battling it out for the playoffs. We're not sure on Big Ben yet because he started practicing. You wouldn't put it past him. Terrell Suggs says he's fooling no one. He expects him to be out there. This is in Baltimore. Who do you like here, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's to me, it's really a tough one to call because it all hinges upon whether Roethlisberger is going to be out there or not. But, you know, I just don't see enough in Baltimore, and I think Pittsburgh. This is not one that if I was betting, I wouldn't touch this one because there's too many unknowns about it. Mm. But I would say I'm going to take Pittsburgh and in hopes that Roethlisberger is going to be on the field.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he makes an appearance. Also, Baltimore have got an NFL low 10 offensive touchdowns this season, so I don't think they can score enough points. Even at home to knock off the Steelers. Moving on to the next game, Dallas at Cleveland. So, Jeff, I guess we saw a few ups and downs from Dak Prescott last week, but they still won the game.
Yeah, it was a little more rocky than he had, but, you know, he still made plays when he had to make plays. You know, he showed his mobility as he got out of the pocket and then, you know, got away from the rush and found Witten for the touchdown. So, you know, I think this has really turned into... And it's really interesting to hear me say this, but I think this has really turned into Dak's team. You watch them and they gravitate towards him. He has a great leadership ability. He's a smart enough young kid that in the media he makes sure he, you know, gives love to everybody. And I think he's handled this thing extremely well.
Yeah, I'm going to go Cowboys as well. Ezekiel Elliott leads the NFL with 799 rushing yards. Dak Prescott was passed on by the Cleveland Browns 8 times. He was passed on by a lot of teams, to be fair, but Browns could have had 8 shots at him, Jeff, and they didn't want him. They took Cody Kessler 42 picks earlier, so we'll see how that one plays out. Jacksonville, Kansas City, so we've already talked a little bit about the rebuilds. Jeff, Kansas City are just very, very quietly 5-2. And they're very, very quietly 15-2 in their last 17 regular season games. They've lost Jamal Charles, but they never really had Jamal Charles back this season. This is just a team that quietly gets it done.
Yeah, and again, much in the, you know, much like their head coach, just, you know, kind of low key under the wire, I guess, a little bit in terms of, you know, attention. But man, I'm gonna tell you something. They have good football team. You look at them play. That young corner Peters is special. And, you know, nobody talks about him when you start talking about the greatest corners in the game. But I'm going to tell you something. Look at the number of interceptions that kid's had in 2 years in the National Football League. They've got guys that can get after the passer. They've got weapons on offense. And I'm telling you, Alex Smith is a much better quarterback than people give him credit for. I thought he played extremely well, got hurt, got back in the game. Mm. He can do an awful lot for you. And they found a way to take advantage of his skills, his ability to get the ball on the perimeter. You know, he's accurate. And again, they take advantage of what their players can do.
I'm going Chiefs. You, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
All right, both going Chiefs in that one. Let's move on to the New York Jets at the Miami Dolphins. So the Jets are 3-5. They've won 2 games in a row. The Dolphins are 3-4. They've won their last two home games, and they've put up over 400 yards of offense and 200 yards rushing in each of those wins. Dolphins are 3-1 at home this year. Sorry, Jeff. Actually, here's a number I wanted. This is jumping out at me. I'm in my notes here. Darrell Revis was targeted 16 times by the Cleveland Browns last week. A shocking number when you consider how teams used to stay away from Revis. Maybe it's a sign of the times now. He, by his own admission, has said his body is breaking down.
Yeah, and again, I think this has probably been happening for a couple years now. Mm-hmm. He's had a surgical knee. I mean, he's getting at an age for that position where you start to lose, and it goes really fast. You lose a step out there, and you know, again, that's the National Football League. There's nobody going to be sending you Christmas cards, you know, when you can't play. And I mean, to tell you that if you lose a step, they go right after you. And to think that the Browns were targeting 16 times is, you know, a little bit of a shocking number, really, to me. I think this game, you know, this is a big rival game, Neil. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the reasons why is that South Florida is filled with expat New Yorkers. So the Jets have a real strong following down there. And I think that when you look at the two teams, you know, while both of them have won a little bit lately, I really think it's Miami who, you know, has the better chance here. So I'm going to take Miami at home.
I'm going to go Dolphins as well. Jay Ajayi is looking to become the first player in NFL history to have 3 200-yard rushing days. That's quite an ask when you're facing the Jets. They've still got a good, decent front seven, although they tried to shop Sheldon Richardson, by all reports, Jeff.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's the constant roster shuffling. It's the constant look ahead that teams have to do. And you're always trying to get better. You're always trying to get cheaper. You're always trying to find a way to give yourself an edge going forward. So, again, it's one of the reasons why, you know, we say in pro football that, you know, there's none of us have our name on the back of a chair. It's somebody was sitting in that chair when, you know, when you got it, and somebody will be sitting in it after you leave it. So it's just the nature of the business.
The first game we have on Sky Sports on Sunday is the Philadelphia Eagles at the New York Giants. So the Giants are coming off their bye week following their win at Twickenham in London. The Eagles, Jeff, have turned into, I mean, their defense is playing really well, but offensively I'm going to be worried. They're kind of dink and dunking it. Carson Wentz hasn't completed a pass that's traveled 15 yards through the air in the last two games. They were, by all accounts, heavy inquirers into a Torrey Smith trade, which didn't materialize, and they will, even Terrell Owens has said he's available and at wide receiver. I mean, it's like they need to kickstart this offense again. They've gone 1-3 in the past month.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Doug Peterson, the head coach, had said that he needed to be more aggressive, more aggressive in his approach, more aggressive in his play calling. You know, so I'm sure you'll start to see some of that, though, come out of them. I think their defense is playing extremely well. But I was really impressed with the Giants and how they did when they were over, you know, in Twickenham. And the way that they, against the Rams, kind of evolved their offense, got the ball out of their hands quick, you know, really threw an awful lot of slants and you know, routes that could beat the blitz. And again, Philadelphia can get after you too with the blitz. So I think this is going to be a huge game for both teams, but I think the Giants are trending in the right direction. So I'm going to take the Giants.
I'm going to take the Giants as well. So we are the same on every pick so far. And it's interesting you say that about how the Giants adjusted in London, Jeff, because one of the knocks and one of the accusations leveled at Ben McAdoo this year as he's moved from offensive coordinator to head coach is that his offense has been too predictable. And you know, the Giants do need to be a little bit more flexible, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, again, and you think of, not only did they throw the ball quick and they beat the blitz that way, but I thought they did a good job of moving players around. You saw OBJ at a number of different positions, catching a number of different ways, ball a number of different ways, getting him matched up against a number of different people. So I really thought that they're, you know, what they've done offensively has now started to trend in the right direction, because, as you say, earlier in the season, they, you know, they just looked stale offensively. But I was impressed with them, you know, again, the game against the Rams.
All right, next game up, Detroit at Minnesota. Detroit are 4-4, Minnesota are 5-2. The Vikings are 3-0 at home in their new stadium, Jeff. So I get the feeling, really, with this one, Detroit, the target is get to 21, and it might be enough, but getting to 21 in that Viking stadium is the challenge. Detroit have been in close games every week, Jeff. Every one of their games has been decided by 7 points. So this could be, it's quite a challenge for Detroit, but one that I think they'll be up for making it a close one.
Yeah, Jim Caldwell has them a dangerous football team. And, you know, Matthew Stafford has the ability at quarterback, you know, to beat you, you know, a lot of ways. And he's an underrated, in my opinion, quarterback in this league. I just think with the noise, with the environment in that stadium, I think the Vikings now will have an increased sense of urgency. I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of offensive changes come out of Pat Shurmur now being the offensive coordinator up there. But this is a Vikings team that recognizes at 5-2, they've gone from undefeated to 5-2 in 2 weeks. They're trending in the wrong way. There'll be a definite sense of urgency in this game. I think it'll be close, but I'm going to take the Vikings.
Yeah, I think Mike Zimmer's going to be, he's always angry with his team, so he's especially going to be this time. So I'm going to take Minnesota as well. You mentioned Matthew Stafford and what he brings to the Lions, potentially having his best career year without Calvin Johnson, and he's gone 9 touchdowns, no interceptions in his last 4 games, Jeff. 126 passes without an interception. Incidentally, that's actually the battle of the first overall picks, isn't it? Stafford was 2009 and Bradford 2010. So,
yep, exactly. And you know, it's interesting with when you look at this game and you think about this game, and the media has a tendency, and you know, we're part of it, we have a tendency to anoint games as bigger than they really are. But to me, this is a huge game for Minnesota. It's a divisional game at home. You need to win all of those if you're going to win your division. It's a divisional game at home, and it's a game that you're playing after losing 2. So you need to right the ship. You don't want to go. You don't want to lose 3 straight. Three straight losses in the NFL is a big deal. Mm. And so I think there's an awful lot of pressure, and I think there'll be a real sense of urgency in the Vikings this week.
Jeff, this is a game I'm going to be watching with fascination. Carolina at the LA Rams, because the Rams are not shy about trying to hit opposing players, whether it's quarterbacks, receivers. They bring a physicality to their defense every single week. It's just the Jeff Fisher way. It's the Greg Williams way. They are a physical defense. And Cam Newton, as we know, wanted to speak to the commissioner, Roger Goodell, about the protection he has been offered or the lack thereof. This is going to be now interesting to see if Cam gets some of the calls that he feels he hasn't been getting, or if the Rams are going to back off, which I don't think the Rams are going to back off. You're laughing already.
There's one thing I can guarantee about this game. The Rams ain't backing off, and the Rams are going to blitz a lot. So you can get ready, Cameron, because they are not shy about hitting you. And again, I think sometimes, you know, Greg's going to always carry the stigma of the Bounty Gate deal when he was in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest about who Greg is. Greg coaches that style of defense. He coaches aggressive, physical, attacking defense. They're going to blitz you. Their whole thing is built around pressure, hit, hurry, confuse the quarterback. And, you know, that's just what they do. They're not cheap. I don't see that in them. I know that they're physical, and they preach physicality, both running the football and and on defense. I think the thing that's interesting when you look at the Rams, they've kind of gone the other way offensively. When you see them throwing the ball as much as they're throwing the ball, I think they've got to find a way to get back to who they are offensively. And again, Carolina had a huge win last week. I mean, that was a big, big win. They looked like Carolina again. You know, Thomas Davis, you know, makes a big play, scores a touchdown, defense scores, defense plays well, you know. So this is a big one for both teams. I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna take LA in LA, and say that the Rams are gonna be able to knock them off.
All right, I'm gonna go Carolina. That was more like the Panthers we saw from last season, last week. So I'm picking the Panthers to win on the road. Let's rattle through a couple quick, Jeff, because I want to get into the mailbag and get a couple of questions before we get you off to practice and all your preparations. New Orleans at San Francisco. I'm going to go New Orleans. San Francisco are still a mess.
Yep, I'm taking the Saints.
All right, and then we've got this game on Sky Sports on Sunday night, Tennessee at San Diego. I quite like where Tennessee are going, Jeff. I kind of picked them as a team. I wrote an article for their game program, and I picked them as one of the teams to kind of watch in the second half of the year. Phillip Rivers is always competitive, but I'm going to take Tennessee, who are the more physical team, I think, to go out west and win on the road, which would be quite an achievement.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. The thing that's fascinating about this game, is, you know, you're looking at one quarterback in Phillip Rivers, who's the old gunslinger, the guy who's always done it, you know, the guy with the gray in his beard now, and the young kid who's coming up, who's playing extremely well. I think Mariota's playing really good football right now. I see so much Dick LeBeau about this defense in Tennessee. They've got the ability to run the ball. They got a big, strong offensive line. So I'm going to take Tennessee at San Diego, but I think it's going to be a great football game.
Yeah, Dick LeBeau has been a key to that defense that has 22 sacks in the first half of the season. Let's move on to Indianapolis at Green Bay. It's the same old for the Colts. Andrew Luck was sacked a lot last week. They didn't get the job done. They suffered a disappointing loss at home to Kansas City. And Aaron Rodgers is working with a cast of receivers that I've never heard of, Jeff. Geronimo someone, Trevor Davis. I mean, not that I've never heard of, but it shows how deep they are into their depth chart.
Geronimo who?
is it Geronimo Allison?
Geronimo someone?
I remember it was Geronimo, but I should... I'm going to find out now. I think he deserves better.
Yeah, well, I would say so. He's a Hall of Famer. But, you know, it's the same old, same. It's the same old, same old with Indianapolis. You know, they can't protect the quarterback. You know, you saw a little flash out of Frank Gore last week, but they can't protect the quarterback. Too one-dimensional on offense. You know, just too many problems on that team. And it's a shame because Andrew gets hit way too much and has to do way too much. But I'm going to take the Packers at home.
I'm going to take the Packers at home, and I guessed off the top of my head, and I nailed it. Geronimo Allison, 22 years old, wide receiver out of Illinois. Boom, get in. what a good game Sunday night, Jeff. Denver at Oakland.
Well, that'll be a battle. Now we're back to the old Denver-Oakland rivalries, right? I mean, those two teams go back a long, long way. Two AFL teams that have been playing each other for, gosh, a long time. And, you know, the Raiders overcame penalties, 20-some penalties in the game. I'm going to tell you something. That Carr is really, really a good quarterback. He puts balls where it's almost impossible to get a ball. He had 500 yards passing. A different animal they're playing this week in Denver, though. And interesting, I don't know if you caught this, Neil, but Broncos added some additional captains for the second half of the season, you know, that were voted on by their teammates. You know,
oh, okay.
Simeon was picked as one of those guys. I think there were three of them, and Simeon was picked as one of those guys, which I think says an awful lot about that young kid and how that team feels about him. Mm. I'm gonna say, yeah, this is hurting me, and Raider Nation, I'm gonna just have to whisper this, but I'm gonna take Denver.
All right, Jeff's going Denver, and the Denver defense has had 75 quarterback hits this season. It's the most in the NFL. I'm an offensive guy. I love quarterback play. I'm going the Raiders.
All right.
I'm going Derek Carr. I'm a big Derek Carr fan.
Yeah, I am too. Huge Derek Carr fan. I just think, you know, when you look at their ability to play man-to-man,
yes,
that's the key thing to me. When you look at Denver, it's their ability to lock it up outside and play man-to-man. Really lets Wade turn them loose inside. And they've got some really – that Shane Ray, rather, has really turned into a good young player. I think he was a really good pick for them. He fits what they do, and he gives them a real athletic guy on the other side of Von Miller.
Should be a great one, that one, though. Sunday Night Football, we'll have it up for you on Sky Sports. We'll also have Monday night game, Buffalo at Seattle. I think Seattle get back on track here with a win at home, Jeff.
I do, too. And, Buffalo still struggles to play run defense. Mm. And, that's one thing that Seattle can do is they typically can run the football, and they will run the football. I think Russell's showing a little bit of the I wouldn't say he's injured, but you know, he's not 100% right now, and you can see it in his play. But I think Seattle still has enough to win against Buffalo at home.
Well, I worry with Russell Wilson, Jeff, because it's kind of what Andrew Luck had last year. Luck was dealing with a bunch of different injuries, and then all of a sudden the cumulative effect becomes too much. So Russell Wilson had an ankle injury, which affected his mobility. He's only rushed for 44 yards in the first half of the season, which for him is unheard of. Tom Brady's got 44 yards rushing on the season. That led to a knee injury, which led to a pectoral injury. And I'm starting to think, when you had that ankle injury early in the season, I know you've only got Trevon Boykin sitting behind him, but maybe you should have sat him down and got him right, because it's now, here we are, we're going into week 9 and we're still talking about a banged up Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and you know, here again, so that the listeners kind of get a feel, the cumulative effect of injuries over the course of the season is 16 weeks of grind. I mean, it is grind. It is hard on their bodies, and particularly at that position. So when you're a guy who's not a big guy to start with, and then you're constantly getting hit, you know, it's tough. I mean, it is really, really tough to be on your game when you're, you know, it's this injury and that injury, and you know, you see it. That's what, again, as I watch Andrew Luck, I have real concerns about him, Neil, in the long haul, because he gets hit way, way, way too many times. Now, he is tough as nails, and so is Russell Wilson. But I'm going to tell you something. You can't stand in that pocket and get whacked as many times as those guys are getting hit and think it's not going to take a toll on your body, because it certainly does.
Mm. Let's have a couple of mailbag questions to finish off, Jeff. This is a good one from PM_UK, who says, will the 20% drop in US television viewing figures make a London team more likely? Do they need to grow new growth markets? Well, actually, I spoke to Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, a couple of years ago, Jeff, and he said there'll be a point where he feels the NFL will max out in America, and that the next step is to move to London. We don't know quite why the TV viewing figures are down, and I mean, you could say Adrian Peterson is out, J.J. Watt is out. There's been a lot of injuries to players. But I do think that at some point a London team adds some kind of attractiveness to the league. What do you think?
I don't think there's any question about that. And I think one of the reasons why it went from one game to two games to three games to maybe four games is because they do see the UK and they do see the International Series as a viable way to grow the game and grow fans and grow viewership around the world. So, you know, Neil, you know this maybe better than anybody, that the NFL is about, you know, business. And if they didn't feel like there was a opportunity to grow the product, to build the brand, to, you know, grow fans, to grow viewers in the UK, they wouldn't be putting more games out here. I mean, it's just the reality of the business of the business. So I think it's all positive when we start talking about, you know, the growth and the future of a franchise in the UK.
Jeff, this is a good one from Eamon Moore, who says, the Redskins bench at Wembley Stadium on Sunday kept holding up a big board on their sideline. What was it for? Jeff, I noticed this as well, and it was when the Redskins were on defense.
Okay, there usually is some communication that goes on the field from the sideline that indicates what offensive personnel group is on the field for the opposing team. So that's typically where what those signs are used for. Now, some sort of communication obviously needed to be made from the field, from the sideline to the field, and again, offensively, you see that more in college football, frankly, than you see it in pro football. I don't know if you ever watch the college teams. Sometimes it looks like they're having a flashcard contest on the sidelines. They got all kinds of crazy things going on the sidelines, but that's the way that they signal in plays, personnel groups, formations, those types of things.
And that's interesting, because they can the middle linebacker can have the radio in the helmet, Jeff. So you're saying it's not the play call, it's more a case of look out for this in addition to the play that we've called.
Yeah, one of the things that you do defensively is you start to build your game plan and talk about how to approach your opponent, and is you know what they do in individual, you know, personnel groups. So, for example, you know, 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. They may do these things in 14 personnel, one back, four wide receivers. They may do these things. So you want to make sure that everybody on the field, and particularly teams now, as they start to do more hurry up and more no huddle, it's harder to communicate. Even though the linebacker may have the headset in his in his ears, he's got to communicate that all over the field. So you may be the right side corner away from your bench, and you still need to know what personnel groups on the field, because they get them in and shuttle them in and out so fast. And, you know, now they've gotten kind of – offenses have gotten really smart and tricky about how they get them in. They'll send them halfway on, bring them off. They'll put, you know, two groups on at the same time, bring one off. You know, you can't have more than 11 in the huddle, but you can shuttle them back and forth from, you know, like they're going to go out, and then they come back off. So you make a personnel change, and then all of a sudden it's a different personnel group in there. So it's part of the chess match of game day on Sunday.
Yeah, and that helmet, that radio in the helmet cuts off with 15 seconds left, doesn't it, Jeff? There's a cutoff.
I know it does. And again, what they're trying to do with that is not let the coaches play the game on, right, you know, like a video, like a video game. So right. There's a lot of communication that needs to get done before the ball snap.
Last one really quickly, Jeff, comes from Richard Walker, who said, who would you guys have as your MVP at the midpoint of the season so far? So, Jeff, we could, maybe Derek Carr would be in there, Matt Ryan. I was asked this question yesterday when I did a little internet piece for Sky Sports, and I said, right now, I would probably give it to Matt Ryan, but I can see it at the end of the season, the way he's playing, even though he's missed four games at the start, Tom Brady will be the MVP.
I know who you. I knew exactly.
Right?
Who,
I knew. Am I wrong?
I knew exactly what you were going to say, and it was the first name that popped into my head.
Yeah,
because you can't fault him, or you can't downgrade him because he was out for four games. The fact is, when he has played, that team is really, really a good football team with him at quarterback. And it's amazing how he just seems to get better all the time. I think the jury's still out a little bit on Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan can be in that conversation. I think the same thing about Carr. I think those guys can be in that conversation. But their teams are going to have to win. They're going to have to get to be playoff-level teams for me to say, okay, that's an MVP candidate. Mm.
Good stuff, Jeff. We are out of time. What's on the slate for this week for the Tiger Cats?
Well, we've got our last game of the season. It's one of those, quote, meaningless games because the playoff seeding's already done, and then one Sunday later, we are in the CFL playoffs and with a chance to win the championships, and that's all you really want in this game is an opportunity to get to the playoffs and get to the dance. So we've accomplished that. We want to play out, keep everybody healthy this week, and jump into the playoffs. And then, Neil, the time is growing. We're in November, buddy. I'm going to be over very soon.
We can do the podcast face to face. It'd be fantastic. Can't wait.
Yeah, we don't have to do it at 5 a.m. anymore, because I know I'm not going to get you up at 5 a.m.
No, you're not. I struggled to make 9 a.m. this morning. I do not keep Lombardi time. But there you are. All right, listen, we will be back.
All right, mate.
We'll be back next week to break down week 9 in the NFL and to look ahead to week 10. Until then, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.